the rest of the story. It was to be a fairy tale wedding such as Tennessee had never seen, that of dashing Governor Samuel and his young fiancée, Eliza Allen. He was almost 36 and she just 20. The ceremony took place in the elegantly candle-lighted parlor of the bride's parents. It seemed a living dream, but then. Then, as Samuel and Eliza were exchanging vows, the governor looked down to see his bride's hand trembling. Not with happiness, not with anticipation, apparently with anxiety. And afterward, in private, Samuel asked Eliza what was wrong. It was then that the bride confessed the rest of the story. Eliza was in love with another man. She'd been pressured by her father into this prestigious marriage with Tennessee's governor. Samuel was heartbroken. Perhaps Eliza could learn to love him, he said hopefully. She was silent. That night, Eliza slept in her wedding bed. Samuel slept on a couch. The next morning, the couple agreed to pretend all was well, but all was not, nor would it ever be. The following day, Eliza confided to a friend that she wished her husband dead. Within weeks, Samuel would wish the same. For Eliza continued to reject his romantic overtures, and he became more and more jealous of the man in whose arms Eliza longed to be, and finally, predictably, the accusation of infidelity. Eliza was outraged. Her fidelity, indeed her virginity, could be corroborated by the Allen family doctor, she declared, and with that the girl fled her husband's home and returned to her father. It did not take long for Samuel to repent of his accusation. He followed Eliza on horseback to her parents' house. There, with tears streaming down his face, he knelt before her. Could she ever forgive him, he pleaded. She could not and did not. Not ever. Political enemies took advantage of the governor's misfortune. Within hours of the separation, the streets rang with obscene speculation. Surely the governor had somehow brutalized his bride. Sympathy for the wronged woman was fanned to flames. A howling mob burned the governor in effigy at the Gallatin Courthouse Square. Samuel, urged by friends to defend himself, refused. He would not take up arms against a woman, he said. And so in the midst of the awful controversy, Governor Samuel, only days previous a re-election shoe-in, resigned. He'd spent years of his youth among the Cherokee Indians. He would return to them now. He would say farewell to worldly glory, to ambition, and even to civilization. Yet not even the kindness of Samuel's Indian comrades could quench his anguish. He began drinking heavily. The Cherokee, disapproving, gave him a nickname. Otsiti Abadadashi. It means big drunk. When else in American history had a man risen to such heights only to fall to such depths? He'd been a major general in Andrew Jackson's command, a representative of Tennessee in the Congress, that state's attorney general, ultimately that state's governor, and now he was nothing. Had his marriage to Eliza Allen succeeded, who could imagine how far Samuel might have gone? Instead, the most he could expect was to endure his despair for a few years, then travel to Texas, where he became its United States representative, its senator, its governor, even the first president of its republic. You've always known Texas' number one son as Sam Houston. Now you know the rest of the story.